You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Welcome to Celtic Stuff Live on the CLNS Media Network, the leading online provider of your coverage for the Boston Celtics. Breaking news, breaking news. Hot off the presses. Seriously, John. Okay, Ainge retires. And this is a major bookend for our show, to be honest with you. I mean, when the Celtics hired Ainge is when I really started paying attention again. I felt when they brought Ainge on board that this was going to change, you know, the direction, the unfortunate direction of this organization for basically since the end of the Bird era. And I felt very confident about that. So it's interesting that, you know, I'd start a blog and then within a year there'd be a podcast and then a lot, you know, the live show and then bang, 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 bang. Everything picked up pretty quickly with us getting off the ground early in the Ainge era. And it's almost ironic that, you know, it's been so long, you know, underneath the Ainge era that we literally just had my son on for the very first time, who just turned 18. And I could tell you that this podcasting thing was what I did when I lost my social life. And so I just find it so ironic that within days of bringing him on the show for the first time, you know, Ainge retires. I'm feeling like a major passing of the torch in so many ways in the last couple of days. And, you know, obviously the Celtics go down swinging as hard as they could possibly swing in a game five loss in Brooklyn, and really made it a first half anyway. But this is the news. And I honestly, John, am surprised and shocked that they were able to keep this as quiet as they did for so many months and have these plans in place for Brad. Maybe the Brad part and the conversation with Brad wasn't, you know, many months old, but the conversation between ownership and Danny is many months old. It's quite shocking that they kept us that quiet. And I got to think the pandemic and isolation had a lot to do with it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I think that's true. And I would, before going down that road, I just want to echo what you said in terms of the impact of this, because Danny Ainge, you know, there's 18 years. There are kids who were born the day Danny was announced.
Yeah, basically my son.
Right. Who are graduating high school this year. Yeah. Right. Yeah. They don't know what it's like to have Danny Ainge not be the general manager of the Boston Celtics. I mean, this is graduates walking down the aisle, diploma in hand within weeks here or days or whatever, and they don't know any other option.
And what an amazing tenure.
Let me tell you something. It's not great. The grass is not necessarily greener on the other side.
No, we'll
get into that.
Yeah.
We'll get into the Brad, you know, all that. I just want to say, I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. The bookend of this and what this, what the Danny Ainge era, what his involvement and his intelligence and his guts and the way that he turned this whole thing around. No doubt that's
trading Antoine Walker. And the
thank God.
Dude, I agree, thank God. But my roommate at the time and I were huge Celtics fans. And by the way, he picked Bledsoe. I picked Brady. You might have heard this story before.
Yes.
And he was a Walker guy, and I was a Pierce guy. And I just, you know, let him know ever since then, regularly and continuously, that he clearly knows nothing about sports. And I am the whiz.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
No, he lost two battles on that, though. It's funny, but I remember when Danny traded Walker. He was fuming mad. He turned on Danny in an instant.
Whoops.
And why could you do that? And then you remember Danny traded him and brought him back to finish out a season.
Yes.
And I remember we went and watched them trounce the Atlanta Hawks that year, just to be able to relive old memories together of watching Pierce and Walker. We took the Downeaster in the North Station. And what an interesting, what just like he came in with a bang, but he really kind of went out quietly. Really? Well, I mean, I know this is big news. But
yeah, it's huge. But in terms of, I think, the production on the floor, and it's not in keeping with the way that he ran the team, the way that he made moves, the way in which he was, I think, an unbelievable success as a leading person in the NBA, in terms of the decision makers that are out there. I think that there are few and very few who are better than him. And I understand that there may be he may have overstayed his welcome. Things may have, he may be, the health thing might be more real than we want to admit or whatever. All of that could be true. But what I see is he picked two pretty dynamic players, I think, mid to late first round last year. I think the jury's still out on that 2019 class. I had a pretty little thread I was going on last night on Twitter just to say, look, these guys have – the 2019 class has really not had its best shake. And the Celtics went in pretty heavy on that class, three picks. Three players in the mid to late round, first round.
And but even then, just
great.
Talking generally and very high level, like when people say that Danny Ainge can't draft, he's done an amazing job.
It's stupid.
He's killed it.
Stupid comment.
It's a stupid comment. He's killed it when he's been in the top of the draft, Yes. And even Marcus Smart was killing it when you look at, I mean, I know you can say, players. But the truth is, when you really look at what was up there, and he had pick number six, and it really wasn't that strong of a draft, and definitely wasn't recognized as a strong draft even at the time. They were like, hey, six picks pretty good, just not in this draft. That's what people said.
Right.
And then here we are, and is Marcus an all-NBA player? No, but he's an all-NBA defender.
Right.
And I think it's and he's a character guy. I mean, I think Danny has done an amazing, amazing job. And even when he made moves, I mean, he brought Kevin Garnett to Boston. He brought Ray Allen so we could get Kevin Garnett to Boston. He did that with Al Jefferson and Delonte West and Tony Allen. Right. When you and Pex. But when you and then he moved KG and Pierce and there just aren't a lot of people in the NBA outside of maybe the Spurs that have been able to put that level of, draft success. I think the Spurs, in many cases, just because they were always picking at the bottom of the draft, did a pretty amazing job with the draft themselves.
Sure.
But that's to me, that's the comparable. Over that period of time, same 20 years, that's the comp in terms of, teams that have just done really well in the draft consistently, for nearly two decades. Right. Those are the two. There's no other team on par with that. Not one.
The flack that he's going to get is that, the Spurs won five and he won one.
Yeah.
But I would say if Tim Duncan had the same sort of injury that Kevin Garnett had, I think the numbers would have been a lot closer. That
or if Kevin Garnett had some earlier, you got to remember the Spurs got Tim Duncan when they still had David Robinson.
Exactly.
And we should have won the draft, and they did. I mean, luck never played in our favor when it came to the ping pong balls. And, you know, it's one thing to get somebody who's going to play 20 years, who's going to go into the Hall of Fame, and then build around him with free agent acquisitions, having a coach that's been recognized in the league as a top coach, just all the things that attract free agents. The only thing I'll say about San Antonio is it's kind of a small market, really. So you got to take your hats off. They had things that were working against them, and you're right against the one against five, but not once did those ping pong balls go our way. And yet Danny just kept
once.
Yeah.
Once they did.
Right, once.
We talk about the latter half, but you're right. Yeah, I mean, and that's what he did is he turned around the luck, really. I mean, even when it wasn't lucky, he used his skill to turn the bad luck into something unbelievable in getting Garnett. And that's, I mean, I feel like the, you know, not only is Twitter and the discourse so ignorant and really brain dead surrounding how good he was.
Oh, I haven't had a chance to watch anything. Oh, are you talking about before today or now? Is everybody saying it's about time we cleaned house? Nobody wants to trade with Danny because he's Danny and he gets the best of everybody. And yeah, I had a 5-minute conversation with my son and he brought that point up, and I said that sounds like mainstream media to me.
Yeah, it's before today, and then it's kind of ramped into overdrive. And you know, look, I'm not gonna pretend this was a great season, but you know, I've been hearing all year about how this season doesn't count. I don't think we're somehow gonna pick and choose what does count and what doesn't count. And I'm gonna just look at 18 years and say how many people have made more consequential deals than KG, acquiring KG, trading KG and Paul Pierce, trading the number one pick for the number three pick. That doesn't happen. I mean, he's basically, I bet three of the top five deals in the last 25 years have Danny Ainge's name on them. That, no one's got that under the resume. Not, there isn't one. You give me any name. You throw Pat Riley at me. You can throw whoever, Sam Presti. I don't care. None of those deals have can hold a candle to what Danny did with trade assets. So I'm just, if you want to have if you want to go someplace and say Danny Ainge sucks and thank God they got rid of him, this isn't going to be, you're not going to get that from me. Might there have been reasons to move? We can talk about that, but just because of age and health and whatever. But the record to me, I wouldn't say it's impeccable, but I'd say it was as strong as, if not stronger than, all but a handful in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And yeah, luck matters. Luck mattered for Red. Luck mattered for Danny Ainge. Luck matters for Pat Riley. It matters for all the greats. And you know, a pandemic gets in the way, and you know, Hayward's leg shatters. You know, these are things you can't control. And so, you know, I think to put the bookend on the Danny Ainge experience, to me, like, I think that there's really no way you can overstate how strong it was, his record was. And I still believe that the jury's still a bit out on, you know, the last couple of years, at least in terms of, if you want to look at the draft. You know, I think that there's some I think there's more argument to be made about moving on faster from guys like Hayward and Kyrie and all that. I think that is really, and that really does set the tenor for where the Celtics are right now. But if you want to throw the gauntlet at the 2019 draft class and say, see, he sucks, I'm just not there. Because
You're just riding that pony.
The 2019 draft.
Oh my God!
A year ago. Hold on.
You cannot bring this up all summer. You cannot bring this up all summer.
It's what they're saying. It's what the I just heard Bill Simmons talk about. Why didn't they just throw five extra picks to trade up to get whoever?
You have a dance partner. Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what people are hearing. Okay. And we've always done is
push. I just can't even. That. I don't even want to talk about that.
I'm just saying the 2019 draft.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about
the 2019 draft.
Blah, blah, blah.
Rob, well, stop it. Come on.
Not you, them. It's just
I know.
Boys.
I'm just saying.
It's
just,
yeah, but
Rob, a year ago. Where was Rob Williams? Not even a year ago. 6 months ago in November. Rob Williams was people. There were so much questions about Rob Williams that the Celtics had to go out and spend $10 million to over or $18 million over 2 years to bring in Tristan Thompson. So, you know, look, we could be in that position with, you know, and look at where we think of Rob now. We could be in that very same spot with Grant and Romeo. I'm a little more out on Carson, but at least those two.
Way out.
Those
way
two.
Out.
Now you're thinking something different about that 19 draft class. So that's just my – I'm just kind of fed up with that, you know, bitching about the 2019 draft
class.
Oh,
I could tell. I could tell.
It pisses me off.
To me – I could tell it pisses you off, but to me that's just such a yawner of a conversation, right? Like if I'm going to have a conversation about something, it's got to have legitimacy. You can't take one draft class and use that to toss out an 18-year career, and it's that simple. It's not even worth debating. It's not worth breaking down Rob Williams and whether they could have had this trade or not. You know what is worth talking about in this whole scenario is what the hell was really going on in the background. Like you said, the health and everything else, but there was something that, you know, both Angel alluded to and Brad in wanting to move out of the head coaching position about managing the team and everything else during the pandemic took a toll on them. What does that mean? Does that mean that the league made this difficult? Does it mean like what side of the fence did they stand on with all that? Did they think that everything should be shut down? Were they worn out because the finances of running the team and just figuring out how they were going to navigate that? Like, Or was there something going on culturally? You know, I just feel like, and we're not, and here's the deal. Not only do I feel like there's a heck of a lot more to the story behind the scenes, I also know we're definitely not going to hear any of it, at least not anytime soon, because Brad is sticking around, right? If Ainge had retired and Brad said, you know what? It's time for me to move on. I don't really want to be a head coach. I want to be a GM, and they're not going to have, you know, they're not going to give me the opportunity, or, you know what? It's changing of the guard. We're just going to all go our separate ways. I think we would have gotten a lot more intel in the next 6 to 12 months about what was really going on. Because Brad is sticking around, you're not going to hear shit. We're not going to get any details about what was going on. I mean, because obviously there were lots of conversations, lots of emotions. You know, you don't use words like burnout, force, you know, basically push me out of the game. I couldn't. You don't do things like that simply because of isolation and having to adapt, you know, to not having fans in the building and, you know, a shortened off season. You know, like there's way bigger things going on. And here's another question. Didn't you think that Austin Ainge was being groomed for all of this?
I think at one point, yeah. I think that was.
So what does at one point mean? Yeah.
Do you think I think Danny was trying to make that a thing, you know. But I'm not. I think that lost its luster, perhaps as.
As what? That's my question.
I think Brad grew closer. I think Brad probably put himself in a position where Wick was very trusting and kind of he became Wick's guy, quite frankly. I think that because there was a point, and this is something that Ian Begley reported, is that there was a member of Celtics, a prominent member of the Celtics hierarchy, who wanted Brad fired. Who was that? And Danny talked them out of it. Now, my guess is
wait, hold on. Pegs. It was who?
Pegs.
Pagliuca? Yeah.
Yeah. And so if that's the case, to me it seems like it sets up a situation where Wick's guy's Brad, and Danny was always Pag's guy, and the governor gets his way. The managing partner gets his way. Maybe that's oversimplistic, but It's just kind of the way I was leaning. And if that's the case.
But I see what you mean, because Ainge, you're saying Ainge was Pag's guy. So if anybody was going to talk somebody out of wanting to fire Brad, it would have been Ainge, because he had the relationship to do that.
Yes. And I think Pagliuca doesn't have the juice that Wick does.
To pull it off anyway.
Yeah. Exactly. Pags had to make it Wick and Danny to buy into that idea. He couldn't do it on its own. So if that's the case, I'm kind of ipso facto, if this then, what I'm saying is I feel like as Brad and Wick grew closer together, that created a situation where Danny didn't have as much juice vis-a-vis everybody. That's talk about some serious like things that make you go but it seems to me that's the only thing that makes sense. And if that's the case, then you know, if Wick isn't necessarily as much Danny's guy, then you know Danny's not going to be able to call his own shot in terms of where Austin goes. And there's also this aspect to it that you know, Danny's buddy buys the Utah Jazz, and you know. You know, maybe that's, you know,
Heads home to Utah. Yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, to Utah, which, yeah, there's, you know, a lot of family there. There is that aspect to it. I hate to say it, I had the TV on when I was temporarily paralyzed and unable to change the channel. Felger and Maz were on, and they were just talking about, they felt like it's a firing. That effectively ownership was firing both guys from their jobs. And the only reason Stevens is in the position he's in is because he had a longer contract. And it was just there. This is simply, you know, kind of keep him on under contract and doing something.
I just don't know what the firing is about
and what they're going to do. And we also don't know the future. Like you said, Austin Ainge, we don't know where Mike Zarin fits into this too. Because Mike Zarin is a guy that a lot of teams are looking at to be their GM. So you've just leapfrogged him with Brad. So it brings to mind just so many questions. And I don't think we have any answers. And like you said, I don't know we're going to get many answers, because it's kind of status quo. And, you know, they're allowing the assistants to, you know, to have kind of an internal hire process. And then
all right, hold on. You're moving on too far. We have to go back.
Saying it's yeah, very. They're keeping very much in house.
For sure. Yeah. But what's the deal? You said that they kind of indicated that they felt like this is a firing. They're firing them for this season after the run that they just had in the bubble. Like, that's the most short-sighted, ridiculous bunch of nonsense. And unless they feel like Danny is somehow responsible for the absolute bullshit from the refs, I don't know where else you go with that.
Well,
to these players, Tatum just had, you know, 4 50-point games, and if you're firing Ainge, you got to fire Brad, because it's not about. Yeah, it's somewhat about the roster construction, but they didn't have a full off season to make the tweaks and do everything else that they did. They had like, what, 3 friggin' weeks to handle free agency and get things in an order and get them into camp. Like, the whole thing, it would just be ignorance. You know, it would be ignorance. And if you were to fire somebody for not being able to get the team to where they needed to go, you have to go with Brad.
Yeah. You know?
And that's still stupid. Because they couldn't stay healthy a lick, and that's not Danny's fault. I mean, unless they're holding Danny accountable for trading for Kemba, and kept, you know, maybe they missed something on the medical reports, or Danny said, let's do it anyway. But that, if there's a firing, the only reason to fire anybody at this stage of the game, after where we've been over the last 18 months, it would be for trading. It would be for not really trading. It would be for bringing Kemba in and not finding a way to maybe keep Rozier, or just turning it over to the younger guard and seeing what they could get, you know, in the cap space opened up later. That's the only reason to fire Danny.
Yeah, I don't really give any of that any sort of, you know, credence. I think it's a lot more believable to say these guys were close with Danny. He had all the support in the world from them. He just simply – he saw the writing on the wall. He saw that his connection with these players was not what it once was. He saw his health. He saw, you know, kind of all of that. he decided, and Mark Murphy reported this, he told ownership after the trade deadline that he was going to wrap up. And you
that's
see
what
a
I mean.
Lot
How
of
do
people,
they keep that quiet for that long?
Well,
that's
no,
insane.
But they've kept it quiet, but they haven't, because that's the thing that all these reporters are saying. Well, there were rumors and there were whispers that this may be it for him.
How did that prevent anybody from even alluding to those rumors?
I heard that. I heard people saying that. In
oh, really? You know, okay.
Well, yeah, there were all kinds of little whispery, podcasty things. Well, you know, who knows? There's going to be big changes. You know, that kind of thing. I the thing is, I don't think it really matters, right? Like, you know, no one reported it. No one went on the record. Nobody said anything. Obviously, the big thing is Brad being the guy. And I think everyone expected Brad would continue to be the coach, and they'd find a new GM. You know, that would just be the way you do it. The big shock in this is the elevation of Brad Stevens to be the Danny Ainge, and that's when the 18 years kind of comes back and yells in your face and be like, so the guy who like did this at a very high level for 18 years is leaving, and now you're going to replace him with somebody who's really his duties were not. There was very little overlap between those two guys. You know, Brad would always say, you know, I haven't looked at any of the draft guys. You know, I look at them at the last minute or whatever. You know, so there really is an overlap there. And so there are questions. And I think that's really the part where we have even fewer answers than anything in terms of what does a Brad Stevens era look like. I think we had more answers about what Danny Ainge would look like as a GM. I have more questions about what Brad Stevens looks like than I did Danny Ainge in 2003.
I think it makes a ton of sense to move Brad into this position. I've always felt like he's more of the basketball analyst and mind, and really right in that same mold as Zarin in a way. And to your point, you know, where does Zarin keep the same mold, or now that Danny's gone, does he just go ahead and go take, you know, a GM position, et cetera, et cetera? Maybe they knew or predicted that Zarin would do that, and so Brad naturally kind of like carries the torch forward, you know, by filling what they assume will become a gap with Zarin's departure in addition to Danny's. But I've always thought he makes more sense in that front office-y kind of role than a coaching role anyway. They need a player's coach. I think, I mean, if you just look out there, most of the teams that are having success right now have, you know, players' coaches who literally played. You know, you look at Doc, you know, look at what Kerr has accomplished over recent years. Now you've got Steve Nash. You know, the players, especially this generation, you know, tend to respond to former players. And I think that's a disadvantage for Brad on the court as a coach, and I think it's an advantage for Brad in the clubhouse because you have to have a degree of separation.
Yeah.
And so I think it's a better fit, to be honest with you. And I guess we'll just see, because that doesn't mean the team gets better. I think it's a better fit for Brad, but I'm not saying that they end up with a better head coach, and I'm not saying Brad's better than Danny. I'm just saying I think that the front office position is something that Brad was always headed towards.
Yeah, I think the more immediate. I mean, let's assume for a second that Mike Zarin is staying, at least in the short term, right? That could be a very great. That could be a great, you know, fit. I mean, nobody knows the cap better than Mike Zarin. He's experienced. It can be a bit more co-equal than perhaps it's been. I think it's probably more equal than what we've seen. You know, Danny, I think, has been a little bit more democratic about his ideas than I think a lot of people think. And I suspect Brad will continue that idea. So I think Mike is going to have plenty of say in the operation. It's just not his sole say. And I don't even know if that's what he wants. But I think that there's a role there. But in terms of the coach and the need of the coach, I mean, there does need to be the relationship between the coach and the player, I think, is really never more important than it is now. And, you know, you said players coach, and I think a lot of people take that to mean as someone who's easy on the players. I don't know if that's necessarily the way it is as much as it's building a guy who focuses on building relationships with his players, you know, and Doc did that, but Doc was also a hard ass who nearly fought Rondo and went toe to toe with Paul Pierce and got what he wanted out of, because he was a badass guy from the South Side of Chicago. And so I think the Celtics need a coach who has that backbone, who will stand up and will say, no, this is the way it's got to be. But also is a guy that they'd go to the end of the earth to support. And even today, with what Rondo went through and how caustic Rondo has been with other coaches, he loves Doc, talks to Doc all the time. Same with Paul, same with KG. And it wasn't just because they won a championship. It was because that's the kind of guy Doc is. And I think that's what they need. They need that type of relationship at this point. You know, with where this team is and what those young stars need, they need someone to kick them a little bit, but also know let those guys know that they're in their corner. That's why I'm looking at Chauncey Billups. That's why I'm looking at Sam Cassell. And I think, you know, if this Kara Lawson thing, if what you know, Scal said in terms of his belief that she'll be a final candidate, I think that she's also very much in the mix. So you have to rely on those internal relationships, and I think those internal relationships for Brad are very important. And not being a guy who's been around the NBA and played and all that, I think he's going to rely on someone like Kara, who he has a good relationship, just as Doc was picked because he had a good relationship with Danny.
Mm-hmm. Everything in this world is relationships. Right. So that's the first place I would look. I'm not saying that that's my bet. I'm just saying, don't be surprised if it's a relationship. Yeah. You know, that's just how jobs happen, especially when somebody is taking their first job as the head of basketball operations. Right, they're going to want somebody that they can trust. If they're building a roster, they're going to want to know that the roster they're building is going to play a style of basketball that they're building it for. I think you're right about the democracy piece too, but I think honestly, like, they have to build the roster around the talent they have, and they have to build a style. And so while I agree on the relationships piece, I definitely don't want a square peg in a round hole scenario going on where it's like, well, this is what I'm going to Brad can't go out and say, I'm going to go try to get these players so we can play this game. What he needs to do is see what he has. And you read any coaching book out there, you look at what Belichick does with the Patriots every single year. Nobody goes out and says, I'm going to acquire, well, the exception of Phil Jackson, I'm going to go out and acquire the players that play what I want them to play, right? Instead, they look at the roster construction and they match the head coach and the coaching style with the talent that they have on the floor and their capabilities. And, you know, if you're talking about giving somebody a coaching job that hasn't been a head coach before, you know, that's going to be even harder for Brad to do. And that's where I'm a little bit questionable on the relationships piece, because Brad's going to lose his job a year from now if they don't play better than this year. And so if he makes a poor head coaching choice and the coach loses the players and everything else, Brad's gone next year too. There's no second year on this for Brad, which is because he's already been here. And I do strongly feel that. Like, and I think the team's going to be way better next year just by virtue of having, you know, a near as normal offseason as ever, a chance to do some tweaking, a chance to get healthy. But you got to ask yourself if Rob and Kemba are ever going to be able to be fully healthy for an entire season, right? And one player, Rob, I think you're willing to live with that. His contract will dictate. Another player, Kemba Walker, you're probably not willing to live with that, which is why you alluded, you know, on a show 2 days ago that Kemba may be gone this offseason. And that's precisely how it boils down. And Rob's, maybe they could do some things with Rob conditioning wise, again, with a full offseason. And, you know, maybe, and maybe even just the way he plays, you know, maybe there's something that he's doing, you know, that's subjecting him to recurring injuries, or maybe he's just fragile, or maybe it's a fluke, and the next thing you know, he'll play the next 10 years and be injury-free and whatever, right? All those things are on the table, but with Kemba, this is on a downhill slide, man, and you can pretty much count on that. So I can see movement there, but I do think that there's a little bit of a gamble in the next year. I also feel like it's a perfect position for Brad because in a lot of ways they can only go up from here even if Kemba doesn't return. you know, at this team with a healthy Brown, and I'm not even sure he's going to start next season, right? Like, what's the rehab on that? Sounds like it could be close.
If you believe what was stated, that it was actually a little bit lesser of recovery time. I think they said 3 months.
Okay, so it'll be close. So he's not going to have his off season, but he'll be able to start preseason.
And truthfully, after all the basketball he's playing, him just resting.
Getting some rest is not a bad thing. Yep.
Yeah.
So with all that in mind, you know, I have a hard time envisioning a world where this team doesn't perform better than this shortened season with nearly their eyes closed. And it will matter a little bit what they do with roster construction, and they'll matter, but that's why I say if there's not an improvement next year and Brad hires a coach that just can't corral them and the locker room isn't working and all of that, then there's going to be hell to pay for Brad too. He's not going to hang on that long. Then they'll really look to make a move.
I mean, I think he'll have more than a year. Unless it goes really bad, I think he'll be there more than a year.
I think you'll get more than a year because I don't see a world where they don't just naturally improve, which is my point. If he makes a bad coaching hire and he brings in somebody inexperienced and he gambles and it totally they're, you know, just the same criticisms are here a year later, he's out.
I don't know. I mean, I think that there's going to be a lot of criticism of the players. I think that if there's a year or two and there's a different coach, you're going to see a lot more eyes on the players themselves than you've even seen already. I don't think that they're going to look at Brad Stevens as the reason because he's in a new role. He's not, you know, he's not the guy. The only thing that's been constant are those players, or the players that do return. So I think he'll have a little bit of time to figure it out. It's just the problem is the options before him are not great, right? Like we were talking about, they're not great. He doesn't have like an easy, okay, you know, I can go on to the, you know, tradenba.com and work out a deal that, you know, gets off $36 million and, you know, remains competitive. It just doesn't easily happen. But having said that, you know, this is something that no one's really talked about, or at least I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it. You know, I think that Danny Ainge, the mystique and the aura of Danny Ainge began to work against him over the last few years. You know, I think a lot of these guys came up as assistant GMs around the league that have the top job now. They were assistant GMs, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and they saw Danny pants everybody over that time. Nobody wanted to get pantsed by Danny Ainge anymore. And so he couldn't get even small deals done. So, you know, that's why you walk into a situation like the 2015 draft where you take Rozier and you take RJ Hunter and who was the big? You know, or 16, where you end up having to – you got the 16th pick, and you end up having to take Gabuselli because, well, we'll stash him, and maybe he'll turn into the next Draymond Green. You know, those he wasn't able to move those small pieces. He couldn't turn the ample picks he's had the last two seasons into veteran players who could, you know, support and build towards some sort of winning team, possibly putting them over the top. You know, I think that really worked against him. And even at the deadline, you know, Adam Hilsbach posted a story tonight about how, you know, it wasn't until after the deadline he made the decision. Well, he was trying pretty hard to get Aaron Gordon. He was trying pretty hard to get Vucevic, you know, and he couldn't get that done. If he gets those deals done with Chicago and Orlando, maybe there's a different feeling from him. Maybe he feels like he's still got the juice. Or maybe he just said, you know what, I don't have it anymore. I can't get things done. Now Brad Stevens is going to be able, new guy, new thoughts, new ideas. Maybe that is actually going to make things a little bit easier to create some movement for the Celtics and to be able to make things happen. I don't know. I'm not saying that's true, but it just feels like the looming arc of what Danny has done, those great deals he's done over the past few years, everyone's afraid of being taken. And I think he became more than just another GM making a phone call inquiring about a player on somebody's team, you know?
Well, we're about to learn a lot about this organization, I think, but we're just going to have to read between the tea leaves a little bit. And this has been a rough year. We lost, you know, Tommy, you know, now we're losing Ainge. Like, again, bookending, a lot of changing of the guard, man. It's a really, I don't even want to say, I keep wanting to use the word interesting. It's not interesting. It's, there's a certain level of sadness behind it.
Yeah.
You know, if I were, you know, I'm going to kind of wrap up our emergency podcast, the Amber Alert, where did our GM go? I'm going to wrap it up and just say, like, it's a little bit of a somber day. Like, I wish I could say that I'm optimistic, you know, and normally, you know, when big things happen like this, you and I do get kind of optimistic. And it's not that I'm pessimistic about Brad moving into this role. I've just become accustomed, and I've always been pretty happy with the job that Danny's done. I think he definitely missed out on the Miles Turner deal. You know, there were definitely some things that happened over the last year that I think, you know, maybe he overplayed his hand or whatever. But I mean, but in large part over 18 years, the guys that he picked early on that he then spun off that won him a championship, and even Rondo, come on, guys. You know, Rondo is all of a sudden starting on a championship team in his second year, and he's picked in the 20s. I mean, I just think there's just too much good that happened over that 18 years for me to be like, oh, thank God, a fresh face. Oh, not really a fresh face. And I'm a big Brad fan. I'm not going to say I'm a Brad apologist, but, you know, I've been a pretty big believer in Brad, and he's going to be able to handle the media. I think he's got the right disposition to be able to kind of do what Danny did as a GM, and, you know, and he's even keeled as all get out. I mean, I think there's a lot of positive attributes, but I'm not optimistic. You know, I'm kind of, you know, almost, you know, sad for the past. That's only just now becoming the past in a way. You know, I love Jason and Jalen, and, you know, I've been excited about the future when it comes to the players, and that's definitely true, but saying goodbye to some people in this organization that, you know, honestly, Celtics Stuff Live over the last not quite 18 years, but just, you know, think about the things that we've done, you know, not just with this podcast or, you know, getting the credentials and, you know, this young group that's just absolutely surpassing anything that I ever did, you know, having, you know, called me the podfather, you know, like, having an opportunity to be in a movie. Like, think about all those things that have happened to us, John, you know, over the last X number of years. And it's, you know, I've let a lot of that go for a lot of different reasons. We do this for fun now. And, you know, but there was a time when we did this with career aspirations. You know, we did this with business aspirations. And, you know, as I kind of let go of those things over the years, and even took a break when I relocated my family and let go of the credential access to the Celtics, you know, when those things happened, it's moments like this that make me nostalgic. You know, oh man, I remember when I was in my young 30s and, you know, I didn't know shit, and I really didn't, you know, I thought I did, man. I definitely thought I did, but I didn't even have the level of confidence that I have today. You know, I didn't even know who I was at all in my early 30s. And maybe I still don't, but when I look back, you know, to everything that we were doing at that time in the early, you know, 2000s, I mean, Cripes, we started this podcast the year the term podcast was coined, and it certainly hadn't reached us in Maine. I don't think I heard the term podcast for at least 2 years into it. We used to call it a toll-free call-in webcast produced specifically for Celtics fans. And so, you know, I am definitely nostalgic, and I am experiencing that, you know, for the hope that when they hired Danny, I felt like I was getting behind a winner. I felt like I was getting behind something that was coming on the heels of some pretty big turnarounds for the Patriots and the Red Sox, you know, for one of my very, very favorite teams and my definitely favorite sport. And, you know, we're getting older, dude, and you got to kind of put all that into a little bit of perspective. And you know, Danny retiring today definitely, you know, just kind of makes me sit back right now and think about that.
Yeah. No, I get it. I definitely do. And I mean, there's a lot of questions. You know, the one thing I kind of keep coming back to is, you know, that there's a philosophy and a way to build a team that I really subscribe to. I think it works. I think it's successful. I think it's been tried and true over 18 years. And, you know, I want to know what's different that Brad Stevens sees. You know, there was a comment that, you know, that Danny made today where, you know, he had something like, Brad and I haven't always agreed on everything. We agree on most things, but we haven't agreed on all things. And now it's his turn. I'm interested in what those things are, you know. Was Brad on draft night hoping that, you know, Brandon Clark would be available for the Celtics rather than, you know, taking Grant? Was, you know, those are the types of things that I'm kind of interested by. And of course, we'll never know. There's no way in hell he's going to tell us. That's the thing to me. I think they can find a coach who can work with these guys, and there'll be a short-term bump to the way that things work in Boston and for the way the Celtics work. I'm more concerned over the long term about building a roster, building a team that works. And, you know, I think that there are some questions that were to be asked about the ability to communicate with star players in 2021. It worked with KG. It worked with Paul. Why didn't it work with Kyrie Irving? Why didn't Al Horford stick around? Why did, you know, Gordon Hayward leave? Those are questions I still have that I still don't really have good answers to. I have things I think, and I put a lot on the player. Maybe I should be putting more on the GM. Those are things I don't know, but when I, that's like the immediate, but when I step back further, like you said, I'm really more about, I'm lamenting. I'm sad. It's kind of bittersweet. That was kind of the word of the day. It's bittersweet. I'm happy for what he did. I want him to enjoy his whatever sort of retirement he's going to have. But I also feel like he's getting kind of a raw deal. And I think there's a lot of people who are kind of celebrating of sorts what's going on. And I think be careful what you wish for, because I think it's a lot harder to do this than they like. And I don't think people have that knowledge that you and I had 18 years ago of what it was like on the other side of this, because we had a very clear understanding of what the Celtics look like when they're really bad. And as bad as this year was, it was bad because they had expectations back yep. then. There when were no you... expectations, and they were still, and they were really bad. So it's a different world, and we'll see how Brad Stevens is able to live in that world.
Well, you're right. That's what it is when you get spoiled. And you didn't just get spoiled if you're a diehard New England fan from the Celtics. You got spoiled from just the whole darn thing over the last two decades. And, you know, things like that don't last forever. Hopefully this will be the next era, and that'll be great. But you know what? That's going to do it for this week's bonus, or this bonus episode of Celtic Stuff Live, and I'm going to end on this. A heartfelt thank you to Danny for doing everything that he did to make my life much more enjoyable over the last 20 years. And, you know, I'm going to thank a lot of guys in that organization, because I bet some of them are going to be moving on with a regime change. You know, the guys like Zarin and even Jeff Twiss, who gave this punk a chance along with Brian Olive at coming in and covering that game. So, Danny, thank you. Thank you for what you did. I really, really loved watching this team over the last 20 years. And, Brad, good luck to you, man. All right, that's going to do it. On behalf of founder of CLNS Media, Nick Gelso, my co-host, John Duke, I'm Justin Poole, and thank you for listening to this bonus episode, Celtic Stuff Live.